quickening pace as she wound her way up the lane. When she'd been sitting with Sarah after her disastrous day clutching the yuan and dollars that she'd earned, Maria had thought about running. The money was a joke. Too little for her own needs, let alone Sarah's. A tiny, pathetic pile of cash sitting on their sandy sheets. "We can run," Sarah had said finally. But they couldn't. Not really. If Sarah couldn't work the Golden Mile, she was dead. And if Maria couldn't sell water beside the Taiyang, she was dead too. It was all borrowed time. "I'll talk to Damien," Maria said. "See if we can get an extension." "I can't go there." Sarah didn't meet Maria's eyes as she said it, just picked at her ankle where her strappy high heels cut into her tan skin.
It's not on you. I'll talk to him," Maria said.
"I can't," Sarah broke off.
"He opens their pens at night. I seen them. He opens up the pens and lets them run through the houses."
She shuddered.
"I can't go back there."
"You told me," Maria said. Except she hadn't. Not with words, anyway. Instead, Sarah had returned from the vet's all-night party and huddled up against Maria, shivering in their tangled sheets, even though it was bakingly hot in the basement. The girl who'd gone to the party wearing the best clothes she owned, sleek black dress, pretty and sophisticated, something a fiver had bought for her, treating her like a princess. Her going to that party, hoping to meet guys who were tight with the vet, hoping to find her golden ticket. And then, that same girl, stumbling back after dawn, curling up against Maria as if Maria could protect her from whatever she'd seen.
"They couldn't run fast enough," Sarah had kept blubbering.
Later, Maria heard from other witnesses that the hyenas had been let loose inside the compound, and that Doña Arroyo and her blonde boyfriend, Franz, had died. The hyenas had run them down and fed on them. A lazy, easy hunt, because hyenas were used to more difficult pursuit than just tearing apart a couple dumbass zoners who thought they could hold back from the vet. But even without knowing the stories, the hyenas frightened Maria. Their yellow eyes seemed to hold ancient knowledge, as if their memories of want and drought and survival were so much more than Maria's. As they paced her, they seemed to say that she would soon be dead, but they would last forever. The snarling increased as more hyenas caught wind of her. They emerged from the hollowed-out houses that the vet had given over to them, yipping and whistling, laughing and chuckling, swarming. And then they were running past her, racing ahead to some new attraction. Maria looked ahead to the main gates of the compound. Beyond the iron bars, a man with white hair was hurling bloody hunks of meat over into the hyena's part of the compound. The beasts clustered and jostled one another, giggling and surging, leaping for the chunks of ragged flesh as they sailed over the chain link and razor wire. Big monsters, more than a dozen, some of them tall enough that they would have stood face to face with her. Dusty and wild and fast, lunging in for a morsel and then pulling back to crouch and feed,
cruising back and forth behind the fence,
alert and excited, entirely focused on the vet as he lobbed more meat. The animals arched and leaped. Maria wanted to put the hyena's movement into some category that she understood, to say that they leaped like dogs or crouched like cats. Something to match against her own life experience, but they were their own strange thing. Another gob of bloody meat spun over the coils of razor wire. A hyena stood upright for a moment. Jaws snapped. Jaws that would have fit around Maria's head. The vet laughed at the animal's clever capture, his arms red to his elbows. A group of the vet's men were smoking cigarettes, handing a pack between them, keeping an eye on the street as the hyenas called and begged for their master to feed them. Esteban was one of them, When he saw her, he smirked and called to Damien.
Yo, that little water puta's here.
Behind them, the vet pulled something stiff out of the bucket. A human arm. The hyenas went after it, giggling and tearing. Damien ambled over to the gate.
Thought you made a run across the border with all your money.
Despite herself, Maria scowled.
Ask Esteban about that. He took everything. He's right there.
So, you want me to go get him? Maybe sit down and hold a peace, Rose? Talk it through like little kids in school?
The way Damien was smiling at her, he wasn't even surprised that she was short on cash. He knew she was short. He'd set it up with Esteban. He'd meant for her to end up short.
You already got your money.
Damien was grinning now, enjoying the whole charade.
You want to complain?
He jerked his head toward where the vet was flinging more gobs of meat over the fence to his pets.
There's your complaints department.
Maria glared at him. It was rigged against her. It was all rigged against her. She wasn't supposed to make money. She wasn't supposed to get out. She and Sarah were supposed to keep sweating and screwing and dying until there wasn't anything left of them. And then they'd get more Texans and do it again. She saw the world clear. For once, she realized she was seeing the world clear. No wonder Papa had kept himself pretending.
Hey! She shouted. Mr. Vet!
She started waving her arms.
Mr. Vet!
The vet turned at her words. Damien stiffened. He glanced from Maria to the vet and back, his face schooled into a tight, pissed-off smile.
You have no idea what kind of hurt you're getting into.
The vet set his bucket down and waved for a couple of his other cholobis to take it away. They handed him a rag, and he idly wiped at his gore-soaked arms as he strode over. Maria tried to hide her fear as the vet ambled to the gate and peered through the bars.
Who do we have here?
He asked.
No one, Damien said. Girl's behind on her rent.
The vet's eyes went from Damien to Maria.
And what does this have to do with me?
He wiped more gore from his hands and arms, fat and meat and thick, rich blood on the rag.
I had my rent. I sell water over by the Taiyang, Maria said. I had my rent, but he took my money. He had Esteban take it.
And now you're coming to me.
The vet smiled.
I don't know that many people who would consider coming directly to me.
He was solidly built, a bull of a man, with thick shoulders and a shock of white hair and blue eyes, pale blue eyes as cool and high as a cirrus sky, pinprick pupils. The man was staring at her through the links, looking at her with as much hunger as his hyenas, a starved creature, considering what it would do if it reached the other side of the fence. Maria suddenly understood her mistake. The vet wasn't a person at all. He was something else. A demon, climbed up out of the earth. Some kind of creature that ate and ate and ate, and now the demon was staring into her, licking his lips. The fence was nothing as far as a barrier. He could reach through and take her.
Come here.
Blood-smeared, arm extended, stained palm open, crabbed and expectant, beckoning.
Let me see you.
To her horror, Maria found herself obeying the command of his gory fingers. His hand stroked her cheek, gripped her beneath her chin.
What's your name?
Maria.
He tugged her closer still, his eyes pinprick bright, animal and hungry.
What do I see?
He murmured. His eyes appeared fascinated as he turned her face this way and that with his blood-slicked hand.
What do I see?
I can't earn if he keeps taking my money, Maria whispered as he continued to grip her chin. She felt as if she were outside her body looking in.
Maria,
the vet whispered.
Maria, I'm not stupid. Do you think I'm stupid?
No. She could barely force out the words.
So why do you come to me telling me things I already know?
His grip tightened, pinching her vice-like.
You think I don't know everything that happens in my domain, Maria? You think I thrive because I fail to see?
He stroked her cheek again, running the backs of his fingers down her face.
I know you sell water by the Taiyang. I know you'd like to earn more. I know everything about you. I have visions, you see. La Santa Muerte whispered in my ear, and she said you'd be coming. The skinny lady likes you and your little red wagon.
His wild blue eyes scanned the dusty cul-de-sac.
But there's no wagon. I saw you with a wagon full of bottles all glittering in the sun, but all I see is you. Visions have variations, I find. Do you find that's true, too?
Maria swallowed, nodded.
So why don't you work for me, Maria?
I just want to sell my water.
Damien could put you on corners, Maria. High traffic, easy money, or you could carry packages for me. You're smarter than that friend of yours who hides from me. I could use a girl like you. There would be benefits. You could live closer to a relief pump. You could save money for a coyote. There's no way you'll make it north if you insist on earning small money. It's the big money that matters. Big money crosses borders.
I'm just selling the water.
You aren't freelancing, are you?
The pinprick eyes studied her.
Maybe holding cash that you should have passed to our friend Damien?
Maria swallowed, terrified that he somehow knew she'd gone with Sarah that one time and met the fiver. That she'd had dinner with him and listened to him tell her stories about aquifers for money.
I'm not stupid, she said. I wouldn't ask a stupid girl. It's only the smart ones who think they can go it alone.
Again, the empty smile.
It's only the smart ones who think they can carve out their own little niches in our little family down here. Our little ecosystem.
His eyes darted to the hyenas.
Those ones think they could do well outside their walls, too, of course.
His eyes went back to her.
They yearn for their freedom here, to hunt and run. They see us, such little puny, soft and confused things, and they see opportunity. We are not evolved as they are. We aren't adapted to the hardships of eat or be eaten that have toughened their kind. Look at them.
He turned her face so that she could see the hyena staring at them both. Maria swallowed. The vet smiled.
You see it, don't you?
We both see things, I think. The hyena studied Maria with her yellow, piercing eyes, and Maria knew the vet was right. She could see their ancient minds at work. She thought she could almost hear them dreaming of how mightily they would thrive if the vet would just allow them to go hunting beyond the fence lines.
This is their world, Maria realized.
The broken Phoenix suburbs were their promised land. They didn't fear the lack of water. They simply waited behind their fences for the time when they would inherit the earth.
We are not like you, sister. We don't need water. We need blood alone.
If I let them run free, I think they would thrive, the vet said.
Don't you? Maybe someday they will, and all of this city will be their domain.
He released her.
You have an extra day, he said, turning away. Pay Damien what you owe him.
But he's got the money already.
Santa Muerte said I shouldn't throw a party for you.
the vet said. She didn't say I had to stop doing business.
He glanced at his underling.
Damien won't interfere again if you come with what you owe.
His eyes focused on her, as crazed as any hyena.
Pay him, or the next time you come back, I will see you in a party dress.
Maria stepped back, wiping her face. Her hands smeared and came away red from her cheek.
You heard the boss, Damien said, smirking. Better start earning, and don't forget your girlfriend owes me too.
Maria turned away, trying not to think about the blood on her skin, trying not to think of where it had come from. It's just water, she told herself. It's just red water. The hyenas paced her as she walked away from the vet's compound, chuckling and rattling the fences, reminding her with every step that when they saw her, they saw prey.
Chapter 13 Angel kicked his boots up on the Hilton Six's soft bed, propped himself against fluffy pillows, and turned the TV to the new episode of Undaunted. On his lap, he set his tablet, running searches for the journalist he'd let escape. Her friend Timo had been right. She wasn't hard to find. Lucy Monroe, muck-raking journo extraordinaire, was busy raking muck. Phoenix City water attorney slain. Water attorney tortured for days before death. She'd lied to him, all right. Not a blood rag girl at all. Lucy was way crazier than a body chaser. And he had to hand it to her. The woman had balls. Or ovaries, as Catherine Case liked to say, whenever Angel said something that she thought reeked too much of machismo. Balls or ovaries, or plain lack of common sense, Lucy was taking swings at every power player in the lower basin, calling out California, Las Vegas, and Catherine Case, calling out Phoenix Water and the Salt River Project. Angel half expected to find himself named the way she was running. A Phoenix Water lawyer had gotten ripped to pieces, and everyone was pretending it hadn't happened. So now, Lucy Monroe was kicking over every anthill in creation, hoping to stir things up with accusations everywhere and no comments from Phoenix PD and the Attorney General. Angel figured the lady wasn't long for this world at the rate she was going. Someone would get annoyed eventually and put her down. On the TV, Tau Ox had just put a bullet in a couple of Chalobis who'd been terrorizing Texas refugees, and now Tau had a pistol up some blonde guy's mouth and was demanding answers about the burned man. Angel liked Tau Ox's character in Undaunted. Relic Jones, ex-recon marine, returned from his Arctic tour to his home on the Texas coast, only to find his family missing from a hurricane. First season, Relic Jones had spent his time trying to find his wife and kids in the FEMA hurricane domes of South Texas, digging through the human refuse and the swamped shorelines of the Gulf Coast, dodging waterspouts and tornadoes. But now, Relic Jones was on the road, searching. And goddamn if Tau Ox didn't know how to play the character. Tau knew about loss, so the man played Relic just right. Bastard had been washed up until Undaunted. Big in a couple action movies and rom-coms, then disappeared. Turned into a coke and bubble addict. Some people said he'd been a gigolo, and then he'd dropped off the tabloids entirely. People stopped giving a shit about him. There were other stars fucking up their lives in better, more spectacular ways. Tau Ox was done. And then, out of the blue, he got pulled out of the gutter for this role. Now Tau Ox was middle-aged and hard, not the pretty boy he had been. Sucker'd been through the ringer enough to make you believe he really was a Texan. The toilet flushed. Julio came out of the bathroom, buckling his belt. You still watching that shit? I like it, Angel said. Sucker has soul. Tao Ox had scars. He'd had troubles.
He's got depth, Angel said.
Not many actors seemed real to Angel, and sure as shit, no one who acted knew the world Angel ran in. But Tao Ox, when he played Texan, Angel felt it. Angel had been through the ringer, too. When Catherine Case pulled him out of hell, he'd needed rebirth, and she'd given it to him. Second chances. Maybe that was why he liked the cabrón.
What's the word on that chick from the morgue? Julio asked.
Well, she ain't just blood rags. Does real journo, Angel said.
Lot of articles.
He didn't say that there was something familiar about her. When he'd seen her in the morgue, he'd felt a shock of recognition that had shaken him, and more troublingly, it had made him let her go when he should have grabbed her and tried to question her more. Like a fool, he'd let her go, and so now he had to hunt her up again. Embarrassing.
Big bylines. Google, New York Times, BBC, Kindle Post, National Geo, The Guardian, some enviro shit. High Country News, a couple others. Writes a lot about how Phoenix chews people up. She's got hashtags, too. Posts a lot into the hashtag Phoenix down the tubes. She's kind of the queen of that one.
She does hashtag Phoenix down the tubes? Julio was briefly interested.
That one's pretty good. A little like hashtag body lottie. You ever read hashtag body lottie? That one is insane. Better than the blood rags even.
On the TV, Tao Ox put a bullet in the last gangster. A muffled sound. Blood on the dirt.
Lot of bodies to write about, Angel observed.
Believe, Julio said.
We're going to be bigger than New Orleans.
He held up his phone.
Bad news on the Loteria, though.
I think they got 500 yuan into the over 150, but I don't have a confirmation yet. And now those fuckers won't add all the bodies in, bitching that they aren't sure how to count it, with them still digging more out of the desert.
He glared at the phone screen.
You know it's time to get out of a place when even the damn Loteria is broken.
He shoved his phone into his pocket.
Fuck it. Anything else you need before I head north?
You go through that other guy's stuff?
Yeah.
Julio went over to where he tossed all the materials they'd collected from the corpse's evidence bags.
Nothing here.
He grinned and held up a gold card.
Unless you want to hit Apocalypse Now and see how much anonymous cash our dead boy saved up. Might be good for a party.
I'll pass. Julio gave him an exasperated look.
If you're going to be down here any time at all, you got to learn how to have a good time. Texas Bang Bang girls, they'll do pretty much anything for a shower.
You ever heard of Lucy Monroe?
Angel held up his tablet, showing Julio the photo.
That your journal's name?
Julio pocketed the club card.
She's writing all about that James Sanderson guy who was slapped with Foss.
Writing some sensational shit for the blood rags, I bet.
No. Angel shook his head. She doesn't bite on narcos and torture at all. Just goes straight for water. That boy Sanderson was definitely in Phoenix water. Some kind of lawyer for them.
Like Braxton?
Not that important, I don't think.
More of a paper pusher. Kind of guy who digs through country records for the paper that Braxton uses at trial.
Angel frowned.
Sanderson plus your guy Vosovich? Two bodies cut up the same can't be a coincidence. Not with those callies all over his body, too.
He turned his tablet for Julio to see the face of the Phoenix water guy. A pristine image, separate from the mangled face down in the morgue.
You recognize him? Maybe see Vosovich running him? I was thinking maybe your guy Vosovich had him recruited for intel or something.
Julio studied the image and shook his head.
I sure never seen the guy. But like I said, Vos got real cagey with me the last couple weeks. He kept telling me over and over that he was onto something that was worth big money, but wouldn't give any details.
He studied the image.
I just figured Voss was looking to get an extra handout.
He laughed.
I was so pissed that he was angling for a big score while I was stuck down here humping for Case on salary. and now he's dead. And I'm headed for Vegas. How's that for irony?
Shit is ironic, for sure.
Julio looked at Angel significantly.
If you're smart, you'll get out of here with me.
Job's not done yet. Shit, the job.
Julio made a sound of irritation.
Don't think you're going to pull some Relic Jones action hero shit down here. You showed up, you looked around, I'll swear it to anyone.
He made a motion for the door.
So let's both get out. It's not like Case is going to check our homework. We go home and tell her whatever got Vosovich killed was a mirage. Done and done, and we don't end up looking like Vosberger.
Angel glanced up from another of Lucy Monroe's articles. 1,000 words of bile about the Phoenix PD that connected to a cop who'd taken a bullet a couple years back. Woman was a stone-cold muckraker.
Where'd your huevos go?
Angel asked.
Used to be you had balls, big old bull's balls size of my fist. Qué malo, all that. The fuck happened to you?
I spent too much time in this shithole is what.
If you spend enough time down here, it'll infect you too. People down here, they die for no fucking reason. I'm telling you, this isn't some Tawok's bullshit TV epic. It's Jalobis banging on Texans so they can get their colors. It's Mary Perry's getting strung up on the overpasses. It's little kids catching bullets cause somebody loses their shit after a storm. One second you're buying a bottle of tequila in the dark zone, next second you got some sunburned 10-year-old Texas punk frog walking you to the nearest ATM. Shit's crazy here. Even the establishment owners are bailing. I see it all the time on my intel, politicians getting their payoff so they can buy a nice villa over in California, using the cops to drive journos into the desert when they start to ask questions. I mean, seriously, have the state reps have vacation homes up in Vancouver or Seattle, making sure they got special travel visas so they can get out of the state. This place is falling apart. People are starting to strip the bones, and you're here trying to figure out if there's a reason for one more body to be dead.
Two, actually.
Oh, chingada.
Julio shook his head.
No, never mind. 10-1 says Voss and your J.J. Samsonite or whoever the fuck he was pissed off some cholobi at a club and just ended up dead. This place ain't about balls. It's just a hellhole for cheap Juarez drugs, cheap Texas ass, and cheap Iranian bullets.
The Julio I used to know would have called that heaven.
Julio made a face.
You laugh because you haven't got caught in a firefight between a bunch of Arizona militia and those Mary Perry fuckwits yet. After that, you'll see things different, too.
Angel held up his hands in surrender.
I'm not judging.
Julio laughed cynically.
The fuck you're not?
He checked his phone again and shoved it into his pocket.
Oh, and by the way, fuck you if you think I care what you think.
So that's it? You don't got anything for me before you go? Goodbye kiss? Any other intel I should know about?
Oh, sure, I got all kinds of shit. I got nice weekly reports on who got promoted at Phoenix Water. I got prior rights water filings up the ass. I got reports on the city's aquifer desal and chemical filter plan, which is a fucking pipe dream.
I've got reports that Coca-Cola is pulling out of their brand new bottling facility because it's cheaper to ship from Cali. And it doesn't matter how many incentives Phoenix gives them to stay. I got reports on how far the Verde River is sunk underground now. I got USB drives full of intel for you. And I can tell you that none of Voss's stuff was worth dying for. It was all bullshit paperwork.
So you don't think these water rights he was hunting were real?
I'm saying I don't give a shit. This place is dead and I'm out of here. Only reason I stayed this long is 'cause you're a friend.
Sure, Angel said. I get it.
It made Angel feel old, seeing Julio turned into something so different from what he'd been. They'd done work down on the Picos and out on the Red River in Oklahoma. They'd done work on the Arkansas, making sure Colorado's eastern cities stayed fat and didn't make another run at the water on the far side of the mountains that Vegas depended on. They'd done a lot together. But now Julio was like a beaten dog, eager to cower and flee. Angel decided he wasn't sorry to see the man go. After Julio departed, Angel flipped open his tablet again, going back to the journal, still trying to get a feel for her. Like all ambitious journalists, she'd even written a couple of books. The first one wasn't anything special, typical collapse porn, following a neighborhood as it fell apart. Wells had been pumped dry, and Phoenix had refused to run water lines out to support them. And then the CAP had been blown, and water got cut off to the whole city for a while, throwing everyone into a panic, and Lucy Monroe had been there to document. Angel had seen plenty of journos do this kind of work. It was easy to feed outsiders' interests in a collapsing city. Cheap, tearjerker stuff. Masturbation material for preppers. The only difference between Phoenix and a dozen dying cities in Texas and Alabama and every coastal city around the world was that Phoenix had taken hits not just from the climate change and dust storms and fires and droughts, but also from a competing city. Angel enjoyed how Lucy's finger spent a lot of time pointing north to Vegas. Catherine Case got a chapter, along with the Southern Nevada Water Authority and the suspicious circumstances of the CAP's bombing. It wasn't particularly deep stuff. Lots of people profiled Case. Queen of the Western Desert, Queen of the Colorado River, all that. And lots of people noticed that when the CAP blew up, Las Vegas immediately stopped spilling water out of Lake Mead, keeping the reservoir's water level just above intake number 3. Angel was pleased that Lucy had gotten every little bit of his secret world right. But collapse porn was a dime a dozen, really. The second book, though, that was something else entirely. The second book was deep. A murder book. A body book. Lucy hadn't written anything for years after the tearjerker, and she'd changed as a writer. This was Phoenix after everyone stopped giving a damn. This was Phoenix with a murder rate that approached the levels of the cartel state's births. This was a Phoenix where people just gave up and sold their children. Implosion porn on a whole other level, and as far as Angel could tell, Lucy was up to her neck in it. Before, she'd been on the outside, reporting. Now it was personal. More like a journal that she kept at night. Bitter, raw, exposed and intimate. Full of madness and loss and disappointment. The kind of journal that a person on the ragged edge of sanity kept and wrote between the switch from Tecate to Tequila. She was drowning. Angel could see it on the pages. She was embedded so deep, the place was pulling her down. Julia was smart enough to get out and not die for Phoenix. But this journal... Angel had a feeling she'd follow her stories right down to hell. And now she was focused on James Sanderson. From the article she was writing, it looked like the water lawyer was where she planned to make her last stand. Angel studied her pictures. Striated sun-browned skin, wild pale gray eyes. She'd gone native. In some indefinable way, she'd gone pure Phoenix. She was going crazy, lost in uncharted territory. That was what he'd seen when he'd met her in the morgue. She'd been looking at him, and he'd felt the connection immediately. Someone who'd seen too much, just like him. He'd known her, and she'd known him, too. Angel stood and went to the window, looking out at the dying city, watching crowds in the clubs down on the wannabe Vegas Strip. People pretending they had a life. People scrambling and wishing for a future that was already out of their reach. Above them, another Chamber of Commerce billboard glowed. Phoenix, rising. When Lucy Monroe had written her first book, she'd barely grasped what Phoenix was, or what Vegas was, or what loss was. Now she knew, and she knew him. "And if she knows you," Angel murmured, "there's a good chance she knows a hell of a lot more." Chapter 14. To Lucy, the golden Anon card in Jamie's wallet had stood out like a flaring beacon. Jamie had partied, but he didn't do the golden mile. The man wouldn't have touched a place like Apocalypse Now with a 10-foot pole. He liked jazz and dimly lit boy bars, not the gauche flash and noise of the Golden Mile's gambling and club scene, and definitely nothing as tacky as the postmodern cliché that Apocalypse Now represented. Apocalypse Now was the kind of club where Callies and Fivers picked up desperate Texas girls. Jamie would never have stooped so low. "It's got a fucking exclamation point in its name," he'd once lamented.
"Maybe it's meant to be ironic," Lucy suggested.
"No, this is what happens when Phoenix tax credits fuck narco dollars."
They'd been winding down the Golden Mile one evening, dodging Texas hookers and keeping an eye out for someone willing to sell Jamie some bubble.
"And no, that's not on the record," he said.
"The Water Board's position is that economic development is necessary, and that an entertainment draw for outside dollars is a priority for water allocation. So don't fucking quote me."
The Golden Mile had been Phoenix's attempt to build a Las Vegas south of the river, to siphon off some of the gambling capital's capital, and to do unto Vegas as Vegas had done unto the CAP. It had produced a dismal result, but despite Phoenix's failure to suck up its rival city's gambling dollars, bars and restaurants and casinos and clubs had opened, and a certain amount of revenue flowed in. Fivers liked slumming out of the Taiyang, and Callies liked to border crash for the weekend. Foreigners liked to tour the Apocalypse by day and party themselves senseless by night. Places like Apocalypse Now prospered.
"Maybe we should use exclamation points at the development board," Jamie had said glumly. "Phoenix, rising."
So to Lucy, standing in the morgue and riffling through Jamie's last belongings, the Anon card stood out like one of the Phoenix Development Board's desperate neon signs, exclamation points and question marks scrawled all over it. She parked her truck and grabbed her mask. Winds were kicking up again in the evening. She didn't think another dust storm was coming, but better safe than sorry. At the doors to the club, bull-necked men wearing CK ballistic and Apocalypse-branded dust masks waved metal wands over the men and women in line as the winds kicked street sands into many whirlwinds around them. The guards pressed their fingers to earbuds, listening to instructions, and squinted in the flying grit. Girls in skin-tight sheets stood on tiptoe, whispering promises, offering bribes to get past the velvet ropes, while rich Fivers and Callie stormed the doors with nothing but the credibility of their tailored suits. As soon as the guards got a look at Lucy, though, they did their job and bounced her. Everything from her outdoorsy dust mask to her jeans and t-shirt told them she didn't belong. Behind the club, she found people more amenable to cash and conversation. She ended up in the back alley, sharing an electronic cigarette laced with a hashish overdrive cartridge, talking to a bartender on break, and squinting as dust devils scoured the alley. To Lucy's surprise, the bartender identified Jamie's photo with pursed lip recognition.
"Sure, I see him all the time," she said.
She sucked on the cigarette, purple LED glowing on its tip.
"You sure?"
She exhaled slowly.
"Just said so, didn't I? Shitty tipper considering who he runs with."
That sounded like Jamie.
"Who'd he run with?"
"Fivers, mostly. People out of the Taiyang." She shrugged.
"Dadong chum."
"Dadong?
You don't know that one?" The bartender laughed. "You know, Dadong hit the hole, right?"
She made a motion with her fingers.
"It's Chinese, right?"
She made a face of exasperation at Lucy's puzzlement.
"Oh, come on, it's what the Texas Bang Bang girls say to the Chinese execs. It's about the only Mandarin those girls can say. So you got all these Bang Bang girls saying, Dadong, Dadong, to the Chinese Fivers. Makes you ill. Don't even get the tones right."
"Are those the kind of girls you have inside?"
The bartender shook her head violently. That trash? No way. They work the streets. We only let in the ones who know how to mind their manners. But they're all trying to get their five-digit ticket punched. She jerked her head to the north, and the skyline of rising towers and cranes. Tai Young, baby. As close to heaven as you can get when you're stuck in hell. So you saw Jamie with girls? Lucy was puzzled. Nah. The bartender studied the picture. That one? He didn't play like that. It was Fivers he hung on. They the ones had the girls. She exhaled sweet vapors. Your boy here, he was odd. At first I thought he was hanging on the Fivers, looking to hook up with one of them. Even though we hardly get any gay boys. Not really their scene. But he looked hungry like that, you know? Like he was starved for someone to throw him some scraps. Wouldn't touch the girls, but he still kept hanging on the Fivers. What kind of Fivers was he hanging with? Expat types, mostly. You know, corporate credit cards and hardship posting bonuses, that kind of thing. Chinese solar, Calis, narco boys up from Juarez and the cartels. She shrugged. Whoever had money. You know any names? The bartender shook her head. No. I can pay.
The bartender turned speculative, then shook her head again.
I got to keep my job.
I can pay.
She drew again on her cartridge, exhaled vapors. Look, you want, there's one inside right now, Fiver getting his party on. Your boy used to hang with him a lot. I could point that one out, but that's all I do. I don't do names. How much? Shit. For you? You got 50?
Lucy ended up watching from the edge of the club's darkness as the Fiver dirty danced with a pair of Texas Bang Bang girls. One blonde, the other Latina. Neither of them looking old enough to be doing what they were doing. Whatever that man was, he just looked like another rich asshole to Lucy.
You sure that one was with Jamie?
Lucy shouted over the noise of the bar. The bartender glanced up from pouring out a red Negroni.
Oh yeah, lots of times. Man pays his bills, big tips.
She tapped her head.
I remember the boys who pay.
He's spendy?
Lucy asked, glancing back at the man.
Oh hell yes.
The bartender grinned.
I just don't put any limits on its success. Soon as you see the blue and white, you know the money's going to flow.
Ibis?
Lucy's head whipped around.
Ibis, you said?
Sure, big company. You see their billboards all over, fracking for the future or whatever.
The bartender started shaking tequila and Cointreau. He's always bragging about how they're drilling some new wells that are going to make Phoenix green. She laughed.
We all know it's bullshit. But the Ibis corporate cards all spend big.
Thanks,
Lucy said. She slid a $50 bill across the bar.
You've been a huge help.
The bartender looked at the money like it was dog shit.
You got yuan?
She asked.
Lucy met Timo on the roof of Sid's, smack in the middle of the old Sonora Bloom Estates, a subdivision that had gone belly up, leaving half-finished housing studding the dirt, and Sid's rising like a beacon amid the devastation. The regulars were busy taking pot shots at prairie dogs, passing an old 22 down the line, cheering when they nailed one of the animals in the increasing dusk. Lucy climbed up the ladder, cradling a pair of Dos Equis, and gave one to Timo.
Come on, Timo, help me out.
Timo's phone rang. Almost before he answered, she could hear his sister Amparo starting to bitch him out.
Help you out?
Timo sounded incredulous as he hung up.
Help me out, how about? I'm up to my eyeballs in pics of dead Texans, but I still need words. You going to do this with me or what?
Amparo's boyfriend dumped her again, so I'm earning for everyone. I got obligations.
I just don't want to do this collapse porn stuff anymore, Lucy said.
You were happy to do it when it paid the bills.
Okay, okay, I'll see if we can get a couple fast stories.
She waited.
But I've something else, too. Bigger stuff.
Prize-winning stuff?
He was interested despite himself.
No guarantees.
but she let it dangle, letting him imagine the credibility a really big story could bring for him.
What you got?
I got a name on a guy. Michael Rattan. Works for Ibis.
He did?
Lucy laughed. No, I think he's here working for California. I spent a lot of time digging through all their corporate databases looking for pictures, and I think this is the guy.
She showed him the pic on her phone.
I'm pretty sure he's a fiver, but I can't seem to get any other information on him.
Can't get an office address. Can't get a home address in the Taiyang. I'm wondering if some of your friends might be able to track him down.
What else you got on him?
Not a lot. He's with Ibis Exploratory. I confirmed that, but only because their corporate PR announced a reshuffling. He was sent out here to serve as chief hydrologist on the Verde Aquifer project.
Seismic interpretation, exploratory hydro...
Yeah, that's fine. What else?
That's pretty much it.
He had his records suppressed from public search, and my private searches don't even have him in Arizona. They've still got him out in San Diego.
Yeah, if he's rich, it's harder for sure. Those people pay to keep themselves real private.
I've got some money I could put into this.
Yeah? Timo perked up.
Someone funding us? I can do something with an expense account.
Lucy shook her head. It's not like that, so don't get crazy. I'm doing this on spec. It's out of my pocket.
She drank from her beer. The rifle cracked, and a prairie dog did a cartwheel out in the dust and fell still.
Oh, Timo mulled.
Well, if you're willing to front the cash, I've got a lady who does the records for Taiyang Utilities. If your guy Rattan has got a bill in his name, and not his company, might be able to pull it that way.
How long would that take?
He made a face.
Well, I got to wine and dine her.
Lucy opened her bank account and keyed an amount.
I can give you 300 yuan if you can make it happen fast.
Timo grinned and pulled out his own phone, bumped hers, transferring cash.
Guess I know what I'm doing tonight.
Chapter 15.
Are you sure this is going to work?
Maria shouted over the crash of the music.
She tugged at the hem of her sheath, feeling painfully exposed in the borrowed dress. It barely covered her ass.
Sarah gave her an encouraging look, shouted something that was lost in the noise of Apocalypse Now, and dragged Maria deeper into the crowd. Dancers' faces flashed in shadow relief. Strobes of color, skull hollows, blood splashes, icy cheekbones, dizzy heavy beats, and the press of bodies.
Maria let herself be guided. This was Sarah's world. Maria understood almost nothing of it. Everything was new and overwhelming. The bass beats, the crowds, the press of skin against skin, the feel of her sheath, the exposure of her body. She felt hyper-aware of everything, of flesh, of breath, of eyes wide open. People's teeth blew under black light.
Sarah dug in her purse and pushed something into Maria's hand.
Take this,
she shouted over the noise. Maria held up the minuscule squeeze tube, a bit like the liquid tears that people used to clear their eyes when flying sands got too bad.
What is it? Bubble.
Maria shook her head and offered it back.
I don't want it.
Sarah shrugged and pushed it up her own nose.
Squeezed and inhaled.
She gasped and reached for Maria's shoulder, her fingers digging in as the drug hit. Sarah shook her head, laughing and shaking. Her nails cut into Maria's skin. She swayed for balance, eyes bright, peeking up at Maria through the fall of her hair.
You sure?
She teased.
It makes it easier, makes this fun.
Maria hesitated.
Okay.
Sarah grinned, pleased, and pulled another bulb from her purse.
Don't worry, it's good.
And then she was cradling Maria's head in her hand and pressing the bulb into her nostril. Cheap plastic whiff, like vinyl.
Do it!
Maria inhaled, and Sarah triggered the dose. Bubbles spiked Maria's sinuses,
Maria jerked away, blinking, eyes watering. Hot, then cold. Wasabi painful right behind her eye sockets, and then more. She swayed. Sarah wrapped her arms around her as she shook.
Easy, girl, easy.
But it wasn't easy. Maria's skin felt as if it were covered with a million coiling snakes, microscopic, writhing across her skin. Coiling, sliding, slithering patterns that pulsed and twisted in time to the pounding of her heart, the surge of her blood, the beat of the club. The drug was music, pounding through her, filling her, stretching and smearing her, and then blossoming with wild life. Suddenly, Maria could feel everything. She laughed, surprised. Her body was alive. For the first time, she was truly alive. She stared at Sarah, wide-eyed.
This feels good.
Sarah laughed at her surprise. Maria felt everything. Every pulse of light, every beat of the bass.
She became hyper-aware of the sheath on her body. But where it had previously felt strange and tight and too revealing, now it felt sensual.
The dress was a caress when she moved. Everything was a caress. Sarah's hand on her waist was something to lean into, something to taste, to wrap herself in. Maria reached out and stroked Sarah's cheek, fascinated by the feel of the girl's skin under her fingers. She could run her fingers across that soft skin for days and never lose interest.
It's good,
Maria said wonderingly.
I told you.
Sarah didn't wait for Maria to enjoy the high. She grabbed Maria's hand and dragged her deeper into the crowds. The press no longer felt claustrophobic or intrusive. It was more like a playground. Maria reached out to touch people as she passed. Her hands trailed across the back of a man's silk shirt, ran up a woman's hip. She seized opportunities to press against anyone who passed, and she felt their hands caressing her body in turn. Fingers and hands everywhere, touching, squeezing, pinching. Every connection sent bubbles through her. She was horny, she realized. Desperately turned on. She felt like some sort of starved animal, so primally desperately driven, so ravenous for touch and sex. A part of her was embarrassed, horrified at what the drug was doing to her. This wasn't who she was. It wasn't what she did. But the rest of her didn't care. She let herself be swallowed in the needy pleasure of the dancers and lights and the hands and bodies.
Will you come on?
Sarah was still tugging her hand. Maria felt too good to argue. She let herself be pulled along, reaching out to more people as she passed, loving them all, laughing at their hands on her body. Abruptly, Sarah dropped Maria's hand. Maria turned, confused. Sarah was wrapping herself around a man, kissing him, the one who'd told her about aquifers, Rattan, the hydrologist. The one who wanted them both, and who Sarah said would take her north when he left.
The reason they'd come in the first place.
Maria lost interest. The music was too good. The DJ was mixing Los Sangre over Daddy Daddy, and the crowds were there for her. Let Sarah do her thing. Maria danced, feeling ecstatic. Feeling free for the first time in her life. Not caring about anything. Not fearing anything. Maybe tomorrow they couldn't pay rent and they were dead. Maybe this was the last good thing that would ever happen to her. Tomorrow would be dust and want and asking Toomey for pity and a loan that he probably couldn't give. But tonight, she was dancing dirty with a man, and then a woman, and then by herself, letting her hands run up and down her hips, feeling the beat as she moved. Bunching the fabric of her sheath in her fists, loving the way it tickled her palms as she swayed to the music. The music wasn't loud anymore. It was inside her. She moved to it, beats and pulse, another heart flooding her with life. Maria caught a glimpse of Sarah with her man, the two of them watching her.
Sarah looked infinitely older in her miniskirt and high heels and makeup. Just like the makeup that she'd helped Maria apply to her own face, dolling her up so she could earn back everything she'd lost with her joke of a water scheme. Sarah waved her over. Maria held out her hand to Sarah's man, flirting, liking how it felt when she presented it to him as if she expected him to kiss it, liking how he took her hand and didn't let go, liking how Sarah leaned close, the heat of her breath on her ear.
"He's good," Sarah said. "He'll pay. He wants to party."
"How much?"
"More than enough. He wants a big old party."
Sarah pulled Maria close. They danced together. The bubble was thick in Maria's skin, rising. The man waved down a waitress in high heels and tight shorts and the shreds of a blouse. The woman came back with tequila. They all drank shots. Sarah had more bubble in her purse. Maria didn't protest as Rattan held a bulb to her nose. Her legs went weak, but he held her close. His erection pressed hard against her belly, thrusting against her, demanding. A promise. Maria smiled up at him, addicted to the touch, the strength of his hands on her. No wonder Sarah did this gig. Maria was flying. She was alive. She'd been dead. Maybe she'd been dead all her life, but now she was alive. Maria and Sarah danced for him, the two of them, close. Sarah's lips were on hers, and Maria was surprised that she didn't mind. Sarah's tongue, wet and strange and hot on her lips, needy. Maria let her mouth open, kissed Sarah back, feeling the bubble rising in her. Rattan came up behind, pressing against her ass. Maria moaned between them, sandwiched in their embrace and the beats, all of it pressing in on her, hot and fast. His hands traveled her body, fumbling for her breasts. Maria didn't care that people were watching, didn't care that she was exposed. She was kissing Sarah again, kissing her hard, chasing after her mouth, wanting Sarah's lips. A hunger was growing inside her, a need so powerful she didn't understand it except that she was starved for Sarah's kiss. They left the club, spilling out into the hot, smoky night. The char of faraway forest fires and the dust of dead farms roiled around them. A boy in a white coat with a black and bone-pierced nose emerged from the haze, waving for a car. They piled in, a tumble of laughter and limbs rolling through the streets, moving through the smoky darkness. All Maria knew was that she was glad to have found this drug and this feeling and that Sarah was there. Glad that Sarah was holding her again and pulling her close, that she was peeling off the straps of Maria's sheath, exposing her breasts again. Maria arched, wanting to feel Sarah's lips on her and desperate to do the same, to expose Sarah's small, bright breasts, to devour those pink nipples so different from her own, desperate and hungry for a taste of Sarah's flesh. Rattan could do whatever he wanted, as long as Maria had Sarah. Sarah mattered. Only Sarah. Sarah's hand slid between Maria's thighs. Maria opened her legs, aching for touch. There. Maria felt as if her eyes were as wide as the moon, staring into Sarah's own wild blue gaze. It was more than electric. It was as if she were flying and falling all at once. Maria was suddenly terrified of her hunger. She barely noticed that they had left the car, that there were doormen and secure elevators, that they were all being whisked into the sky. All Maria wanted was to touch Sarah. She wanted the bubbling power of the drug and Sarah's touch to go on forever. She was terrified that it would disappear, that the moment would end and leave her starved and alone and without Sarah. Rattan's bed was big enough for all of them. Maria's body was slick with sweat and need as she peeled out of her clothes.
She fell again into Sarah's arms.